Working from home has been a thing for a while now, but for some reason, it's not getting any better. We're still dealing with laptop screens overloaded with presentations and video conference call windows, the noise of kids playing and dogs barking, bad laptop cameras. But Meta Portal is here to help. It's the smart video calling device that makes working from home work better. Meta Portal works alongside your laptop, taking calls with Zoom, Microsoft Teams, WebEx, and more, freeing up your laptop to get work done. Meta Portal is a video conference game changer with features like smart camera that pans and zooms to keep you in frame while you move around the room, and smart sound to help reduce background noise so your ideas come through loud and clear. There's even a calendar app so you can spend less time managing your workday and more time seizing it. With Meta Portal, you can make immersive connections with your work colleagues, just like you're back in the office, but with better coffee. Meta Portal, make work from home work for you.
Adyen, the payments platform that adapts with your business, so you can accept all kinds of payments with one single integration. Visit Adyen, ADYEN.com to learn more.
Everybody, I'm Ed Robinson, and welcome to another exciting edition of Extra Base Hit. This is the program that gets you caught up on anything and everything happening around Major League Baseball. Coming up on this edition of the program, we have an interview with Quincy Wheeler. Quincy is the host of the Cleveland Guardians Fancast. We discuss the current happenings with the Guardians, also Jose Ramirez, Shane Bieber, Progressive Field, what makes Cleveland a unique city for Major League Baseball, his favorite foods to eat at Guardians games, and more. That's coming up on this edition of the program. I'd like to start off with my top three storylines. I want to start off with the San Diego Padres. At the beginning of August, when the trade deadline had ended, the San Diego Padres clearly hit the jackpot, not only acquiring Josh Bell, but most importantly acquiring Juan Soto. So now the Padres, the nucleus was intact with Josh Bell, Juan Soto, Manny Machado, and Fernando Tatis Jr. It seemed as though the Padres were destined for a stunning second half of the season. Well, things were looking pretty bright until the middle of the month when Fernando Tatis Jr. would be suspended for 80 games after testing positive for an anabolic steroid. He stated that the positive test came from a medication he took to treat ringworm. So Tatis suspended for 80 games. He's done for the remainder of the 2022 season, and we won't see him again until 2023. But this is tough because the expectations were so high for San Diego. I mean, Padres, they still have a little bit of time to try to make noise, but man, it's going to be tough because remember, the top three teams qualify for the wild card. And, you know, again, as I stated earlier, with Soto coming to San Diego, the expectations were extremely high. Soto, Machado, L, and Tatis Jr. to the mix, and then with Fernando, unfortunately, getting in trouble, getting in the suspension, violating policy, he's done for the remainder. A lot of questions remain with San Diego. Can San Diego get it done? Because remember, you've got Atlanta and Philly that are all in top spots for the wild card spot. And then Milwaukee is not too far behind San Diego. So this is definitely a very intense situation. But, man, San Diego, again, the expectations were very high for them. It went from playoffs, maybe World Series, just trying to stay alive to get a wild card spot. But hopefully, you know, Juan and Manny and the rest of the team, and of course the solid pitching staff that San Diego has, they'll be able to bounce back, able to shake it off, and hopefully they'll be able to make a nice postseason run so they'll be able to play in late September going into early October. My next storyline is going to be the Seattle Mariners. What a season it's been for the Mariners. You talked about great talent in the pitching rotation with Logan Gilbert. Also, of course, and when the trade line happened, they acquired Luis Castillo from the Cincinnati Reds. And then you talk about a once-in-a-lifetime talent with Julio Rodriguez, man, he is definitely going to get a major contract extension. This is going to, I mean, what a phenomenal talent he is. And then, of course, when you add Jesse Wink to the mix, also Mitch Haniger's played well. You got J.P. Carr, Todd France in the mix, also Adam Frazier, who was previously on the also Jake Lamb, Carlos Santana. Then you got Eugenio Suarez. Seattle has been, it seems as though the pride is coming back to the Pacific Northwest in terms of baseball. When you think of sports in the Pacific Northwest, of course, you think of the recent success for over a decade with the Seattle Seahawks with Russell Wilson. But before the Seahawks were hot, the Mariners were a sensation, of course, with the likes of Ken Griffey Jr., Jay Buhner, Edgar Martinez, the big unit, Randy Johnson. Man, but you got to realize, again, Seattle, it seems like the baseball is coming back to the Emerald City. And I mentioned earlier about Julio Rodriguez. Julio recently signed a major contract extension worth up to $400 million. So a lot of money. Let me just say that it's a lot of money. It's a lot of coins and chips and then some. So Seattle's future is intact. And I had a previous guest on the show, Dave Bartley, talking about the rising stars and young talent in Major League Baseball with the likes of a Fernando Tatis Jr. and Juan Soto, and you add Julio Rodriguez to the mix as well as a Jose Ramirez. That young talent is phenomenal, and Seattle has just been brilliant this year. And it's just nice to see the baseball coming back to the Pacific Northwest. It has definitely been a long time, and Seattle right now is in position for a wild card spot, and they definitely have a chance to get it done the way they've been playing as of late. So big ups to Seattle, especially big ups to their rising star, Julio Rodriguez, just the whole Mariners organization doing a fantastic job. And just all around that base to the Emerald City. And for my last storyline is going to be the Boston Red Sox. You talk about a fall from grace. April, rough month for them. May was okay. June was a fantastic month for the Red Sox. July sucked, very sucked at the beginning, but since the All-Star break on the hill, the offense just hasn't been there. J.D. Martinez, Trevor Story, haven't really heard much from the offensive side. Rafael has played nicely. Xander Bogaerts has battled injuries. The Red Sox rotation just hasn't been there this year. Offensively, they've been solid, but the pitching rotation just hasn't been there. Tommy Pham, Austin, during the trade deadline, they were looking for some promise out of him. He's been okay. And then, of course, you had, as I mentioned earlier, with the pitching rotation, James Paxton and Chris Sale on the 60-day injured list. It's been a tough year for Boston, but primarily it's been tough because mainly due to the pitching rotation. And they've also had some downsides on the offensive side as well. JD has been trying to find the bat. He just hasn't had it this year. Boston still has a slight chance to qualify. Remember, Tampa Bay, Seattle, and Toronto are all in their way. And also Baltimore, Minnesota, and the White Sox are all in their way. So it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough because, again, Boston, their pitching rotation just hasn't been there. I mean, offensively, again, they're getting it done with Rafael Devers and, of course, with Xander Bogaerts. And Bogaerts, when he's been healthy, he's been effective. But this has been a tough road for Boston, man, especially after the All-Star break, the trade deadline, thought things would kind of come into the fold, but it hasn't happened. So they're going to have a one heck of a September. They've got to get red hot. They can't lose too many games because, remember, as I mentioned earlier, Tampa Bay, Seattle, and Toronto are all right in front of them. As I mentioned earlier, Baltimore, Minnesota, and the Chicago White Sox are all vying for a wild card spot. Tough times in Beantown, and they've got to get it together. All right, when we come back from the break, I'll give you the current league leaders and standings in Major League Baseball. I'm Ed Robinson, and you're listening to Extra Base Hit.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100. And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest and then a stroke.
This is what high blood pressure looks like. You might not feel its symptoms, but the results from a heart attack or stroke are far from invisible or silent.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
I can't button up a shirt. I can't run.
I've had to learn to swallow again.
That's the only movements that I have. And I'm 33, so I never see this coming.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
Had I done this, had I done that,
hell, I messed up.
Get back on your plan. Or talk with your doctor to create an exercise, diet, and medication plan that works for you. Go to loweryourhbp.org.
Head to toe, everything's changed. Head to toe.
Hey, Sarah.
Oh, my gosh, you're so cute. How do you know him?
Boy, I've been doing like I taught you.
Love the new tattoo, sir.
Let's go!
Dude, that's Sarah. The girl in the pink shirt, that's the girl I was telling you about.
Oh, that's Sarah?
Theater 2 on your left.
Hey, Sarah. What color underwear today?
Hey, Sarah. So when are you going to post something new?
Anything you post online, anyone can see. Family, friends.
See you later, Sarah.
Even not so friendly people. Think before you post.
They said it could be some kind of food allergy.
My muscles ached. I was tired all the time.
It happened like that, a full-blown asthma attack. It was scary.
The unsettling thing about some symptoms is
a fever, headaches. I have these red, itchy welts.
You don't always know what's causing them.
It was Lyme disease from a tick bite.
I had West Nile virus from a mosquito.
A reaction triggered by cockroach allergen.
Bed bugs.
Threats to your health can come from the most unexpected places. Mosquitoes can transmit West Nile virus and also Zika virus. Ticks can carry Lyme disease and Rocky Mountain spotted fever, and allergens from cockroaches can trigger asthma attacks, leading to respiratory distress. Don't wait until you or someone you love is suffering with unexplained symptoms. Get the facts you need to protect your family. Visit pestworld.org.
Welcome back to the program. Now it's time for the current league leaders and standings in Major League Baseball. Let's start off with the league leaders in the American League. Let's start off in the hitting department in batting average. Leading the American League currently in batting average is Luis Arias from the Minnesota Twins. He's batting 319. Coming in at number two is Jose Abreu from the Chicago White Sox. He's hitting 309. Coming in third is Xander Bogaerts from the Boston Red Sox. He's batting 306. And in fourth, representing the Cleveland Guardians, is Andrés Giménez. He's hitting at 304. Coming in fifth from the New York Yankees is Andrew Benintendi. He's batting at 303. Next category is home runs. This man is definitely the front runner to win the American League MVP. He's Aaron Judge. He's leading the American League home run. Currently, he's hit 51. Coming in at number two is Yordan Alvarez from the Houston Astros. Hit 31 home runs. Coming in at number three is Anthony Rizzo from the New York Yankees. He's hit 30 home runs. Coming in at number four from the Los Angeles Angels, another MVP candidate, Shohei Ohtani. He's hit 29 home runs. Coming in at number five is Byron Buxton from the Minnesota Twins. He's hit 28 home runs. Next category is RBIs, runs batted in. Again, at number one, he leads the American League currently in home runs with 51, and he also leads the American League in RBIs with 113, Aaron Judge from the New York Yankees. Coming in at number two, Cleveland Guardians, Jose Ramirez. He has 106 RBIs. Coming in at Kyle Tucker from the Astros. He has 82 RBIs. 80 RBIs. Next category is run scored. Again, coming in at number one from the New York Yankees, Aaron Judge. He has scored 104 runs. Coming in at number two is Alex Bregman from the Houston Astros. He has scored 80 runs. Coming in at number three, Yordan Alvarez from the Houston Astros. He has scored 78 runs. Coming in at number four is Marcus Semien from the Texas Rangers. He has scored 76 runs. And at number five is Jose Altuve, representing the Houston Astros. He has scored 74 runs. Next category that we have is stolen bases. At number one, Cedric Mullins from the Baltimore Orioles. He has stolen 29 bases. Coming in at number two, Rosarena from the Tampa Bay Rays and Bobby Witt Jr. from the Kansas City Royals. They've both stolen 26 bases. And at number five, the phenom out of the Pacific Northwest in Seattle, representing the Seattle Mariners, Julio Rodriguez. He has stolen 23 bases. Next category that we have is hits. Coming in at number one, representing the White Sox, is Jose Abreu. He has 150 hits. Coming in at number two is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. from the Toronto Blue Jays. He has 141 hits. And then we have a three-way tie for third place. Xander Bogaerts from the Boston Red Sox, Nathaniel Lowe from the Texas Rangers, and Ahmed Rosario from the Cleveland Guardians. They all have 140 hits. And the last category that we have is on-base percentage and slugging percentage. At number one, again, Aaron Judge, representing the New York Yankees. He has an OPS of 1.064. Coming in at number two is Yordan Alvarez from the Houston Astros. He has an on-base slugging percentage of .995. At number three, Jose Ramirez from the Cleveland Guardians. He has an OPS of .898. Coming in at number four, Shohei Ohtani from the Los Angeles Angels. He has an OPS of .885. And at number five, Rafael Devers from an OPS of .883. Let's move along now. Team category. Leading the American League in wins is Justin Verlander from the Astros. He currently has 16 wins. Coming in at number two is his teammate, Framber Valdez, with 14 wins, representing the Houston Astros. And then we have a three-way tie for third place. Dylan Cease from the Chicago White Sox, Alek Manoah from the Toronto Blue Jays, and Jameson Taillon from the New York Yankees. They all have 12 wins. Next category is saves. Coming in at number one, representing the Cleveland Guardians, Emmanuel Ponce. He has 30 saves. Coming in at number two, actually, we have a two-way tie for second place. Liam Hendricks from the Chicago White Sox and Jordan Romano from the Toronto Blue Jays. They both have 28 saves. Coming in at number four, representing the Astros, is Ryan Pressly. He has 25 saves. And at number five is Jorge Lopez from the Minnesota Twins. He has 23 saves. Next category is ERA, earned run average. At number one, again, is Justin Verlander from the Houston Astros. He has an ERA of 1.84. Coming in at number two, McClanahan from the Tampa Bay Rays. He has an ERA of 2.20. Coming in at number three is Dylan Cease from the Chicago White Sox. He has an ERA of 2.27. Coming in at number four is Alek Manoah from the Toronto Blue Jays. He has an ERA of 2.60. And at number five, again, from the Houston Astros, Framber Valdez. He has an ERA of 2.63. Next category that we have is strikeouts. At number one, representing the Bronx Bombers, the New York Yankees, Gerrit Cole. He has 200 strikeouts. At number two, from the Chicago White Sox, Dylan Cease. He has 190 strikeouts. At number three, Shane McClanahan from the Tampa Bay Rays. He has 182 strikeouts. At number four, from the Seattle Mariners, Robbie Ray. He has 180 strikeouts. And at number five, Shohei Ohtani, representing the Los Angeles Angels. He has 176 strikeouts. Next category is innings pitched. At number one, Framber Valdez from the Houston Astros. He's pitched 164 innings. At number two is Gerrit Cole from the New York Yankees. He's pitched 157 innings. We have a two-way tie for third place. Alec Manoah from the Toronto Blue Jays and Robbie Ray from the Seattle Mariners. They both pitched 155 innings. And at number five is Martin Perez from the Texas Rangers. He's pitched 154 innings. And the last category that we have is walks plus hits innings pitched. At number one, Justin Verlander from the Houston Astros. At number two, Shane McClanahan from the Tampa Bay Rays. At number three, Tristan McKenzie from the Cleveland Guardians. At number four, Nestor Cortez from the New York Yankees and his teammate, Gerrit Cole, at number five. That takes care of your league leaders in the American League. Let's move over now to the National League. Let's start in the hitting category at number one, leading the National League in batting average is Paul Goldschmidt. For the St. Louis Cardinals, man, Goldschmidt is definitely going to be in a consideration for the National League MVP. Paul is currently hitting .333. At number two, representing the Los Angeles Dodgers, is Freddie Freeman. He's hitting .326. Coming in at number three, representing the New York Mets, Jeff McNeil. He's hitting .320. At number four, representing the Los Angeles Dodgers, Trey Turner. He's hitting .308. And at number five is Jose Iglesias from the Colorado Rockies. He's hitting .307. Next category is home runs. At number one is Kyle Schwarber from the Philadelphia Phillies. He leads with 36 home runs. Again, Kyle Schwarber, another strong consideration for the National League MVP. At number two, Paul Goldschmidt from the St. Louis Cardinals. He's hit 33 home runs. And in a three-way tie for third place in home runs, Pete Alonso from the New York Mets, Mookie Betts from the Los Angeles Dodgers, and Austin Riley from the Atlanta Braves. They've all hit 31 home runs. Next category is RBIs, runs batted in. Again, here's another candidate in strong consideration for National League MVP, Pete Alonso, representing the New York Mets. Pete Alonso and Paul Goldschmidt from the St. Louis Cardinals, they're both tied for first place in RBIs in the National League with 105. Then we have a two-way tie for third place. Nolan Arenado, again, another strong MVP candidate representing the St. Louis Cardinals, and also Matt Olson representing the Atlanta Braves. They've both hit 87 RBIs. And in fifth, CJ Cron from the Colorado Rockies. He's hit 86 RBIs. Category is runs scored. At number one, representing the Los Angeles Dodgers, Mookie Betts. He scored 100 runs. We have a two-way tie for second place. Freddie Freeman from the Los Angeles Dodgers and Paul Goldschmidt from the St. Louis Cardinals. They both scored 92 runs. And then we have a two-way tie for fourth place. Tommy Edman from the St. Louis Cardinals and Dansby Swanson from the Atlanta Braves. They both scored 84 runs. Next category that we have is stolen bases. At number one, John Birdie from the Miami Marlins. He's stolen 31 bases. At number two, from the St. Louis Cardinals, Tommy Edman. He's stolen 26 bases. At number three, Ronald Acuna Jr. from the Atlanta Braves. He's stolen 25 bases. At number four, Trey Turner from the Los Angeles Dodgers. He's stolen 21 bases. And at number five, Starling Marte from the New York Mets. He's stolen 18 bases. Next category that we have is hits. At number one from the Los Angeles Dodgers, Freddie Freeman. He has 164 hits. At number two is his teammate from the Dodgers, Trey Turner. He has 161 hits. At number three from the St. Louis Cardinals, Paul Goldschmidt. He has 154 hits. At number four from the Atlanta Braves, Dansby Swanson. He has 147 hits. And at number five is his teammate from the Braves, Austin Riley. He has 144 hits. And the last category that we have is on-base percentage plus slugging percentage. Number one, Paul Goldschmidt from the St. Louis Cardinals. He has an OPS of 1.037. At number two is his Cardinals teammate, Nolan Arenado. He has an OPS of 0.936. At number three, Mookie Betts from the Los Angeles Dodgers. He has an OPS of 0.913. At number four, his teammate from the Dodgers, Freddie Freeman. He has an OPS of 0.913. And at number five, from the Atlanta Braves, Austin Riley. He has an OPS of 0.912. Let's move over now to the pitching category. Again, We talk about National League Cy Young Award winners, possible winners. One of them is could possibly, you could put him in the list as well, Tony Gonsolin from the Los Angeles Dodgers. Actually, Tony, along with Kyle Wright from the Atlanta Braves, they're both tied for first place in wins. They both have 16. Coming in at number three is Julio Urias from the Los Angeles Dodgers. He has 14 wins. And in a two-way tie for fourth place, Tyler Anderson from the Los Angeles Dodgers and Carlos Carrasco from the New York Mets. They both have 13 wins. Next category that we have is saves. You talk about the best of the best when it comes to the closers in the National League, a three-way tie for first place. Josh Hader from the San Diego Padres, Kenley Jansen from the Atlanta Braves, and Taylor Rogers from the Milwaukee Brewers. They all have 29 saves. And then we have a two-way tie for fourth place, Daniel Bard from the Colorado Rockies and Edwin Diaz from the New York Mets. They both have 28 saves. Next category that we have is ERA, earned run average. At number one from the Los Angeles Dodgers, Tony Gonsolin. He has an ERA of 2.10. Next, coming up at number two, again, this gentleman definitely deserves some National League Cy Young nods as well. Sandy Alcantara from the Miami Marlins. He has an ERA of 2.13. At number three is Julio Urias from the Los Angeles Dodgers. He has an ERA of 2.32. At number four, Zach Gallen from the Arizona Diamondbacks. He has an ERA of 2.53. And at number five, Max Fried from the Atlanta Braves. He has an ERA of 2.56. Next category that we have is strikeouts. At number one, Corbin Burnes from the Milwaukee Brewers. He has 195 strikeouts. At number two is Carlos Rodon from the San Francisco Giants. He has 191 strikeouts. At number three, Aaron Nola from the Philadelphia Phillies. He has 190 strikeouts. At number four, Charlie Morton from the Atlanta Braves. He has 168 strikeouts. And at number five is Sandy Alcantara from the Miami Marlins. He has 167 strikeouts. Next category is innings pitched. At number one, I just said his name earlier, Sandy Alcantara from the Miami Marlins. He's pitched 185 innings. At number two, Aaron Nola from the Philadelphia Phillies. He's pitched 170 innings. At number three, Miles Mikolas from the St. Louis Cardinals. He's pitched 168 innings. At number four, Logan Webb from the San Francisco Giants. He's pitched 165 innings. And at number five is Adam Wainwright from the St. Louis Cardinals. He's pitched 163 innings. And the last category that we have is walks plus hits and innings pitched. Number one, Tony Gonsolin from the Los Angeles Dodgers. At number two, Zach Gallen from the Arizona Diamondbacks. At number three, Julio Urias from the Los Angeles Dodgers. And at number four, Aaron Nola from the Philadelphia Phillies. And at number five, Corbin Burnes from the Milwaukee Brewers. And that takes care of the league leaders for both the American League and the National League. All right, let's move along now to the current standings in the American League and the National League. Let's start off in the American League. The New York Yankees are currently the leader in the American League East with a record of 79-51. The Tampa Bay Rays have a record of 71-57. Coming in third are the Toronto Blue Jays with a record of 70-58, followed by the Baltimore Orioles with a record of 67-61, and the Boston Red Sox are last with a record of 62-68. We move along now to the American League Central. The Cleveland Guardians have a record of 68-59, followed by the Minnesota Twins with a record of 67-61. The Chicago White Sox are next with a record of 63-66. The Kansas City Royals are next with a record of 53-77, and then the Detroit Tigers are last with a record of 50-79. And then we have the American League West. The Houston Astros have a record of 83-47, followed by the Seattle Mariners with a record of 71-58. The Texas Rangers are next with a record of 58-70, followed by the Los Angeles Angels with a record of 56-74, and the Oakland A's have a record or come in last in the American League West with a record of 49-81. So now currently, where does the American League playoff picture stand? Well, as follows, as I mentioned earlier, the teams that are currently the division leaders are the Houston Astros, in the American League West with a record of 83-47, and then next are the New York Yankees with a record of 79-51 in the American League East. And then the Cleveland Guardians are the current leaders in the American League Central with a record of 68-59. If the playoffs were to start today, these would be the top three wildcard teams in the American League: the Tampa Bay Rays, the Seattle Mariners, and the Toronto Blue Jays. Remember, the top three wildcard teams qualify for the playoffs. Tampa Bay currently has a record of 71-57. Seattle currently has a record of 71-58, followed by Toronto has a record of 70-58. So Tampa Bay, Seattle, and Toronto would all qualify for the playoffs. Would be the three wildcard teams if the playoffs started today. In the meantime, Baltimore, Minnesota, Chicago White Sox, followed by Boston, and then you have Texas, and then you have Los Angeles Angels, are all fighting to stay alive to get those top three wildcard spots in the American League. Let's move over to the National League right now. Let's start off in the National League East. The New York Mets currently are the leaders in the National League East with a record of 82 wins and 48 losses. The Atlanta Braves are next with a record of 79-51, followed by the Philadelphia Phillies with a record of 72-58, followed by the Miami Marlins. They have a record of 55-74, and then the Washington Nationals are last with a record of 43-86. Next division is the National League Central. The St. Louis Cardinals have a record of 75-55. The Milwaukee Brewers are next with a record of 68-60. The Chicago Cubs come in with a record of 55-75. The Cincinnati Reds have a record of 51-77. And then the Pittsburgh Pirates are last with a record of 49-80. And then the last division that we have is the National League West. The Los Angeles Dodgers are the leaders with a record of 90-38. The San Diego Padres are next with a record of 72-59, followed by the Arizona Diamondbacks and the San Francisco Giants. They both have a record of 61-67. And then the Colorado Rockies are last with a record of 56-74. All right, so here's how it currently stands right now in the National League. Here are the division leaders. The Los Angeles Dodgers currently are the leaders in the National League West with a record of 90-38, followed by the New York Mets. They're the leaders in the National League East with a record of 82-48. And then the St. Louis Cardinals come in third, leading in the National League Central with a record of 75-55. If the playoffs were to start today, these would be the top three wildcard teams that would qualify for the playoffs in the National League: the Atlanta Braves with a record of 79-51, the Philadelphia Phillies with a record of 72-58, and the San Diego Padres with a record of 72-59. So again, you have your division leaders in the National League: Los Angeles Dodgers, New York Mets, and St. Louis. And then if the playoffs were to start today, the top three wildcard teams would be Atlanta, Philadelphia, and San Diego. Meanwhile, Milwaukee, Arizona, San Francisco, Colorado, Miami, and Chicago are all vying for those top three spots in the National League wild card. So that takes care of your league leaders and your standings currently in Major League Baseball. We're going into September now with the vengeance, so a lot of teams are going to be playing hard, and the stakes are going to be high. Now, the stakes were high before, but the stakes are even higher as now teams vie for spots going into October in the postseason. All right, when we come back from the break, I have an interview with Quincy Wheeler. Quincy is the host of the Cleveland Guardians Fancast. We discuss the current happenings with the Guardians, including Jose Ramirez, Shane Bieber, Progressive Field, what makes Cleveland a unique city for Major League Baseball, his favorite foods to eat at Guardians games, and more. Quincy is coming up after the break. I'm Ed Robinson, and you're listening to Extra Base Hit.
MFS Investment Management. Our active 360 approach to fixed income goes beyond analyzing financials. We combine active security selection and risk management, striving to make the most of complex bond markets. MFS.com/active360. MFS Investment Management. Our active 360 approach to fixed income goes beyond analyzing financials. We combine active security selection and risk management, striving to make the most of complex bond markets. MFS.com/active360.
Today's Fort Lauderdale forecast? Beautiful, especially for your business. Here, growth opportunities in tech, life sciences, aviation, and financial services are as great as the weather. With one of the top business climates in the country, over 6 million people, and zero state income tax, there's no place under the sun better for you and your business. Learn more from the Greater Fort Lauderdale Alliance at lesstaxing.com. Because life in Greater Fort Lauderdale truly is life less taxing.
There's said it could be some kind of food allergy.
My muscles ached. I was tired all the time.
It happened like that, a full-blown asthma attack. It was scary.
The unsettling thing about some symptoms is
a fever, headaches. I have these red, itchy welts.
You don't always know what's causing them.
It was Lyme disease from a tick bite.
I had West Nile virus from a mosquito.
A reaction triggered by cockroach allergen.
Bed bugs.
Threats to your health can come from the most unexpected places. Mosquitoes can transmit West Nile virus and also Zika virus. Ticks can carry Lyme disease and Rocky Mountain spotted fever. And allergens from cockroaches can trigger asthma attacks, leading to respiratory distress. Don't wait until you or someone you love is suffering with unexplained symptoms. Get the facts you need to protect your family. Visit pestworld.org.
0-2 pitch. Oh, Jose, did you get it all, though? Back to the wall, Profar. He'll watch it sail out of here, and the Guardians will play from in front. Jose Ramirez, the little guy, striking big early. That's clubbed. Deep left center field. It's in the alley, and it is out of here. Jose Ramirez.
You see Snell looking at his catcher. He called for a slider down, and it was down. But he kept his hands back and just slugged it out of here.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the program. That audio was courtesy of Bally Sports Great Lakes, and that's Cleveland Guardians third baseman Jose Ramirez hitting two home runs in the game against the San Diego Padres on August the 24th of 2022. And Ramirez has provided the power for a lot of the offense for Cleveland in this 2022 Major League Baseball season. As we wind down August and go into September, we get into the thick of things, the heart of things, as teams fight for division leads and also teams fight for a wild card spot. We want to welcome a gentleman that follows the Guardians very well. He is the host of the Guardian Fancast, which is dedicated to all things related to Major League Baseball's Cleveland Guardians, Quincy Wheeler. Quincy, welcome to the program, my man.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Ed. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, sir. I appreciate you. And again, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on the program. We're going to talk more about Jose in just a little bit. I want to start off with some other players that have contributed nicely for the Guardians this year. I want to start off with All-Star Andrés Giménez. He had a great first half of the year, but he's kind of slacked off a bit. Just give me your thoughts on Andrés and his 2022 campaign.
Well, Andrés Giménez, last year, you know, it was the first year that he was with the club after the Francisco Lindor trade, and he got off to a really slow start in April. But then towards the end of the year last year in the fall, he really started to kind of come around with the bat. His gloves always looked great. Kind of thought he might be the shortstop of the future, but this year, because Ahmed Rosario has been playing well, still he's been the second baseman and has contributed very well throughout the year. Now, you'll notice if you look at his stats that he's running a little bit high as far as what like batting average on balls in play. So he's getting a little bit lucky throughout the year. But so that's why you see maybe a little bit of a downturn later on in the year as he regresses to the mean just a little bit. He doesn't walk a ton, so that kind of gives him a little bit of a, you know, kind of lower floor if he's going through a rough spell. But overall, I mean, he's still, you know, he's still hitting homers every now and then. He's still getting on base pretty regularly. And you can see, you know, his numbers still looking pretty good overall. So it's been a great year for him. Definitely looks like he's the second baseman or possibly even shortstop of the future.
rightfully so. And you mentioned his name earlier, and I want to bring him up next. Ahmed Rosario, he's come up big in some close games, especially as of late, for the Guardians. Just give me your thoughts on Ahmed and his 2022 season.
Yeah, Ahmed Rosario. You know, he's kind of a lightning rod for Guardians Twitter because kind of coming into the year, the question was, would he play shortstop defensively at a level where you'd be comfortable sending him out there every day? And, because last year he was really not great as a defensive shortstop and the defensive metrics really didn't like him. But towards the end of last year in September, he made a change in his pre-pitch positioning, which really kind of helped him out and made him look better. And he's carried that into this year. So at this point this season, he's been pretty much an average defensive shortstop, which is great. And then his WRC plus is 107. Like he's about a percentile above what you'd expect out of an average major league hitter. And so that's good. The important thing for Ahmed Rosario, and as far as this team goes, is that he never takes a playoff. You know, when he's getting on base, when he's hitting the ball, he's always going full go to first base. And an interesting statistic that he leads the league in is competitive runs to first base. Nobody's even close. As far as when he hits the ball and he runs to first, nobody compares to him in making that happen every time he hits the ball.
All right. I want to talk now about somebody that's been really good for Cleveland and doing the dirty work similar to Ahmed, and that's Josh Naylor. He's become kind of like a cult hero in the Cleveland area and really amongst Guardians fans. Just give me your thoughts on Josh and his play this year.
Yeah, Josh Naylor. So last year, of course, he had that traumatic ankle injury in a game. And, you know, folks, I think were kind of wondering when he might be able to get back and if he might be able to get back. But he kind of surprised the world by coming back in mid-April. And from the time he's come back, he's been a solid hitter. You know, you could see last year those numbers didn't look very good. You could see that he knows where the strike zone is. He's able to take a walk, and he makes good contact. And also the contact that he makes is typically pretty hard hit contact. So you kind of piece that together and say, hey, you know, if he just basically for him, all he had to do was to stop swinging at so many balls, you know, there'd be balls out of the strike zone he would be able to hit, and he'd swing at them and make outs. And so coming into this season, we just wanted to see him, you know, just be a little more selective and try to swing at more strikes. And he's done that. And so he's got 15 homers, 120 WRC plus, you know, basically just two percentiles above a major league average hitter. You know, looks on his way to putting up two wins this year. And yeah, it's been great to find. He looks like the first baseman DH of the future for him. And as you said, the heart and soul of the team, he's always, you know, riling people up. He's so fun when he, you know, hits a game-winning homer or gets a big hit or steals a base. He's stolen a couple bases recently with his one good ankle, and he's just always losing his mind over it, which is fun to see.
All right. And speaking of somebody that's kind of been like another heart and soul of that team, someone that's provided the speed in terms of, you know, getting the hits and also stolen bases, Stephen Kwan. Stephen has been someone that's been pretty popular amongst Guardians fans. Give me your thoughts on Stephen and his play this year.
Yeah, so Stephen Kwan, definitely our Rookie of the Year candidate. He'll probably finish third in the race, and that's probably about right, but certainly not because he's had any sort of a lackluster year. He's right now looking like he's about to put up three wins above replacement. He's running that 122 WRC plus, so again, like two percentiles above the average. He's in the leadoff spot, and the thing that he does is he just basically doesn't strike out or very rarely strikes out is able to take walks and get on base and just manages to put the ball where people aren't. A lot of times I'm kind of skeptical when people say, hey, this player is able to beat the shift. He's able to poke the ball and put it where people aren't. But the thing is that Kwan seems to have the bat control to actually do it, to take a pitch and to put it where he wants to put it, where the defense isn't. And I think that's partially why, like, if you look at, you know, his stats, you might be like, whoa, he's getting lucky. But actually he's not getting lucky. He knows what he's doing. And he's got enough bat control to try to put the pitches where he can. So he's been absolutely crucial for this lineup since they moved in the leadoff spot. The offense has really kind of taken off. And he looks like he's a fixture in the lineup for future, whether in left field or at second or in center field, possibly right now in left field. He looks like he's here to stay, and that's great.
Well, it looks like another player that looks like he's going to be around for a long time with the Guardians organization, and that's Jose Ramirez. I tell you what, it was a dynamic duo when him and Francisco Lindor were together during the short time that they had together in Cleveland. But now Jose has come into his own. I mean, he's already come into his own since he's been a part of the organization, and already he's been a four-time All-Star. And what a season he's having so far this year. Just give me your thoughts on Jose and where he stands in the MVP race this year.
Yeah, well, you know, Ed, it's all good points that you've made. And Jose is definitely the heart and soul of this team. He's the core player, and the franchise made that clear by extending him this offseason and offering him the biggest contract in Cleveland baseball history. I mean, I think basically, Jose made this a good year for Guardians fans by, before the season started, coming to the Dolans and to the front office and saying, hey, let's just get this done. Whatever it takes to get this done, I want to stay here. I don't want to leave for a big market. I don't want to try to get as much as I possibly can in free agency. I want to stay here. I want to go in the Hall of Fame in Cleveland Guardian, and I want to bring a World Series to Cleveland. And so, depending on your calculation, his contract that he signed, he probably took $50 million less than what he probably could have got in the free agent market if he put up a good year this year, which he has, and at least that much. And I mean, you just can't expect that out of a player, but when a player offers that to your team, it's just one of those things that you love and appreciate with everything that you have. So beyond that, of course, as a player, he's tremendous. He doesn't strike out much. He makes pitchers work. He'll take his walks, and he also hits his homers. I will say that since the middle of June, he jammed his thumb in the middle of June, and since then he's been trying to kind of get his timing back, hasn't been able to kind of get on top of some fastballs especially as much as he used to. So we've seen signs recently that he's been able to kind of work that out, and if that's the case, then look out towards the end of the year, because he's going to propel them to the playoffs if he can kind of get back to his pre-thumb jamming incident. You know, I'd say he's a little bit behind the MVP leaders like Judge and Otani, but certainly if he goes on an absolute tear at the end of the year and some of those guys slump, he could get himself back into the conversation.
I want to stay with Ramirez for a moment. Cleveland has had its share of power hitters throughout that organization. Albert Bell, Manny Ramirez, Jim Thome, just to name a few. Where do you see Jose being amongst those when it's all said and done, if he's still a member of the Cleveland organization for a long period of time?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think Jose probably has the ceiling to be the best Cleveland Guardian in modern history, but it will be certainly with Thome. Thome put up some amazing numbers. The thing, I guess, that could separate Thome and Ramirez is that Thome did some of that value he produced with other teams, and Jose's saying, hey, I want to stay here. I want to, you know, fill out my career here. I want to live in Cleveland. I want to make this my home. And so even if he kind of maybe lags behind Thome in a couple of different statistic categories, he's going to be leading in a few of them. He's going to be here doing it in Cleveland, and like I said, probably the first player to go into the Hall of Fame if his career can continue and he's kind of on that trajectory with the Cleveland Guardians hat on. So that'll make somebody a pretty important player for all of us, I think. So,
all right, and then I want to move along now to the other side of the ball, and that's the pitching staff. I want to start off with Tristan McKenzie. Tristan has been a nice prospect for the Indians, and he certainly made waves in Major League Baseball amongst the young pitchers and young talent in the league. Just give me your thoughts on Tristan and his play this year.
Yeah, Tristan McKenzie certainly been a great player for us this year as pitching goes. He's had his ups and downs throughout the year, of course, because he's a young guy. I mean, he's only 25 years old, barely 25 years old, was 24 through most of the season, turned 25 just last month, or just actually just early this month. And yet in the middle of that, he's got a 3.17 ERA, and he's been putting up, you know, striking out a good amount of guys. Especially, you know, he kind of turned the corner around the same time that Jose jammed his thumb, actually. He kind of turned the corner and really started buttoning down what he was capable of. I know you look at a couple things that he's done this year. He shut out the Astros and he shut out the Yankees, which kind of demonstrates what he's able to do with some potent lineups. Just saw him in person last week, and he gave up a couple runs in the first inning, but then struck out 14. And that's the thing about Tristan McKenzie. He doesn't necessarily throw the ball super hard. He's usually hanging around 92, 93 with a fastball. But if you watch him, he's a super tall, lanky kid, and his extension, I think, makes the ball look like it's going even faster at his release point. So when he's got that curveball working, and that's a big weapon for him, when he's got that curveball working, then the fastball plays up hugely, and it's difficult for hitters to be able to sit back on the fastball and try to hammer it when he's got that curveball working. And he's got a pretty good slider, too. So when both of those pitches are working, he's almost unhittable. And that's what the thing, the main thing that you'll kind of notice about him is that people don't hit him. He doesn't give up many hits whatsoever. The problem is when he does, they're home runs sometimes, but they tend to be solo homers because he's not allowing other hits or walks, and you can live with that. And like I said, when the curveball and slider are on, then he can pretty much be unhittable sometimes.
All right, another pitcher I want to mention is Cal Quantrill, and he's been really good this year for the Cleveland Guardians. He currently has a solid ERA, and he's won over 10 games so far for Cleveland. Just give me your thoughts on Cal and his play this year.
Yeah, and Quantrill is definitely one of those heart and soul guys, too, that we talk about. You know, and when they talk about leaders in the clubhouse, they say Ahmed and Jose, they say Josh Naylor, they say Shane Bieber, and they say Cal Quantrill. And you can tell that if you hear any interviews with Cal Quantrill, you can tell he's a super studious guy who knows what he's doing and knows what he's looking for. He's always taking responsibility for whatever goes on and always lifting up his teammates. Quantrill, you know, it's kind of interesting if you look at his numbers. They're, you know, kind of looking at like expected stats that tell you what a player should be performing like. Quantrill will almost always be outperforming those stats because it seems like what he's able to do is stay away from harmful hard hits, harmful hard contact. So if there's hard contact, he's usually kind of pitching. He usually gets the hard contact on his pitch that's going to his guy. And there are a few pitchers that can pull that off, but it seems like Quantrill's kind of the guy who can. And you can kind of see that in his home run fly ball rate. His home run fly ball rates have been consistently in like the 10% range, which is really good. And that's kind of, I think, what he's capable of doing, just reducing the amount of home runs that guys hit because he, you know, he'll get a line drive, he'll get a ground ball, he'll get that ground ball rate up in the, you know, mid-40s, and that's kind of a big deal for him, especially since he's got some good defenders on his team. He's especially looked good in the second half of the year. He looks like he's the guy who would start a third game in a playoff series if the Guardians were to make it.
All right, another pitcher I want to talk about is Aaron Saval. He struggled this year. What do you think has gone wrong with him in 2022?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned him. I'm a big Aaron Saval fan. The big issue with Saval this year has been a combination of getting healthy from last year and then trying to stay healthy. So Savali kind of missed most of spring training, so he was kind of working his way back into things. And you could see that at the beginning of the year. The thing about Aaron Savali is he throws a ton of pitches. You know, at any given point, he might be throwing 5-6 pitches, depending on how you count kind of what he throws. And he might use them at any point during an at-bat. So, you know, like, for example, his curveball is his best pitch, but it's not, you know, you're not necessarily going to throw a curveball every time that you're up against a hitter. So, you know, it's kind of one of those things to figure out, like, okay, what's the percentage that I should throw these pitches? So, like, this year, for example, he's thrown a fastball, four-seam fastball 10% of the time. He's thrown a cut fastball 31% of the time. He's thrown a sinking fastball 2% of the time. He's thrown a slider 5% of the time, the curveball 27% of the time, the changeup 3% of the time. Like, so you could see any one of those pitches in any given at bat and throughout the game, and sometimes he'll break out some of that stuff later in the game to keep guys off balance. But you can understand, like, if you're coming back from an injury, if you're trying to get yourself ramped up out of the season, you don't have that pitch mix quite right, then you're gonna run into trouble. He can't afford to walk guys. He doesn't have that margin of error because if somebody gets a hold of his stuff, they could be able to, you know, they can hit it out. So he's got to be careful about that. But I think the thing that most encourages me about Savali is that he has an all-time career high for strikeout rate this year. He struck out 9 guys per 9 innings, and that's, you know, pretty significant, about a one strikeout per 9 higher than he's ever achieved. And I think that shows that he's probably got the capability to figure this thing out. And I feel pretty good about him for a couple innings, 2 or 3 innings. You know, if you're kind of looking at a playoff series and you want to piggyback him and Quantrill, or you want to have Savali available for a 4th game, I feel pretty good about it, especially since the bullpen's been pretty good this year.
Well, you know, speaking of a pitcher that's been more than pretty good in his short amount of time in Cleveland, and that's Shane Bieber. We talk about some of the premier pitchers in the major leagues, like Gerrit Cole and Clayton Kershaw as well. But Shane Bieber, he's done so many great things in such a short amount of time in Cleveland. Give me your thoughts on Shane and his season.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned him as one of the better pitchers in the league. I think that's true. So Bieber has been working on stuff this year because he also was coming off a shoulder injury last year that took him out for most of last year. He kind of came back at the very end of the year. But it's been clear that he's trying to kind of get his delivery right, as well as find some extra velocity. The big thing for him has been finding that velocity, because for a lot of the year, his fastball has been kind of topping out at 90. And he's a guy who used to, in the past, throw 95. And, you know, that's a pretty big deal when you go from 95 to 90. But the thing that Bieber has done is he said, all right, well, I don't have the fastball the way that it used to be, so I guess I'm just going to rely on my slider and my curveball. And so he's adjusted and been able to do that. And like you said, right now, if you look at, like, the wins above replacement leaderboard, Shane Bieber is 8th in baseball in the top 10, as he almost always is. He's got a 3.10 ERA. He's striking out guys and not walking guys at all. And it's getting better and better as the year goes on, and he's beginning to find that velocity, which is pretty exciting. You know, that's the thing. If he gets himself up to where he's fastball sitting 93 and he can find 95, then watch out. I mean, him and Jose, if they kind of get going the end of the year, then I feel pretty good about their chances to keep this division lead.
I want to stay with Shane again for a moment. I had asked you about the future of Jose Ramirez being in Cleveland. What is the future like for Shane Bieber? Is he enjoying Cleveland? Does he want to be in Cleveland for the long term and try to bring a World Series to the city?
Yeah, good question. I know that the team and him kind of discussed briefly an extension in the offseason and didn't really make any progress, but I know that also they've said that they'd like to revisit it in the offseason. So this coming offseason. So I think there'll be those conversations. A lot depends in Cleveland, of course, on if a player is willing to say, hey, I value security over maximizing my value, you know, and saying, hey, I believe in this organization, and I think that there's some intrinsic value on being part of this organization. And I have no way to know if those things are true for Bieber. And, of course, I don't have any expectations of that. You know, he can certainly, you know, he's got skills, like we were just pointing out, that only 10 people in the world have. So if he says, hey, I want to try to bet on myself and maximize my value and hit free agency, then that's his prerogative. If that's the case and they revisit an extension in the offseason, then I wouldn't be shocked to see them trade him, but I also wouldn't be shocked to see them keep him around for another year and kind of ride it out with him. You know, he's definitely got the kind of mentality that you want here. As I mentioned, he's a guy that folks look up to in the dugout. So the team will certainly take that into account and remember that when they're talking about a potential extension. You know, they have new ownership that they're bringing on, so it's possible maybe that they're willing to go a little bit higher. But I will say that it probably doesn't make sense for small market teams to extend too many pitchers just because of injury risk, and Bieber having had some shoulder issues in the past would play into that. I expect my guess would be that Bieber is here for another year. He's a free agent 2025, so I suspect he's here for another year. That gives the team a chance to bring guys from the minors up, like Gavin Williams, Daniel Espino, and Shane Bibee are all pretty darn good starting pitcher prospects. So you see them come along, and they can kind of help fill in the gaps. And then so I think probably after 2023 is when they'll look to trade Bieber if they can't extend him. So that's kind of my expectation. Hopefully they can extend him. That'd be exciting.
I hope so, too. I mean, Shane's one of the top pitchers in the league. And speaking of top pitchers, closers, they are so important, especially when we get into late September and October going into the Fall Classic. Some of the top closers in the league, such as Jordan Romano, also Josh Hader, and Kenley Jansen, but Emmanuel Clase, what a season he's had. And, man, he had a great ninth inning to seal the deal for the American League in this year's All-Star game. Give me your thoughts on Emmanuel and his 2022 season.
Yeah, what a weapon Clase has been. Of course, fans might remember that the Guardians acquired Clase in the trade for Corey Kluber, and it was hard not at the time to feel like they probably should have got more than Emmanuel Clase and Delino DeShields for Corey Kluber, as good as we thought Clase could be, because we knew he could throw 100 miles an hour. Had some issues with walks, but were like, well, they could probably figure that out. But it's still, it's like, man, an elite starter for reliever. Kluber's had some injury issues, but does this make sense? But it turns out that the Guardians really knew what they were doing there. Kluber, unfortunately, has had continued injury issues and a diminished fastball, which has made him less of an effective pitcher, though he still is effective, and that's very good to see. I have all kinds of fond memories of Kluber. But the Guardians can't complain about what Emmanuel Clase has turned out to be. As you said, one of the elite closers in baseball. It might be Edwin Diaz and Felix Bautista and Emmanuel Clase are your three best, and you could rank them in any order that you want, and I wouldn't have an argument with it. As somebody who sees Clase on a daily basis, it's hard to imagine anything better than what he does. Big thing this year, he's been able to really refine that slider, which has dropped his walk rate from about 2 per 9 to 1 per 9, and increase his strikeout rate a little bit. He's actually somebody who doesn't shy away from contact, you know, so he's not necessarily popping off the page with numbers of strikeouts. He'll allow some contact, but it just seems like it's contact that never goes anywhere, goes right at somebody. A lot of times he's sawing guys' bats off, and they're just grounding the ball into the dirt, and guys will get him out, and he's got some good defense behind him, so that helps. So, yeah, it's good to see, and like you said in the All-Star game, he kind of demonstrated what he's capable of. I think one of the things I most enjoyed about him this season is that he dominated the Yankees in that game I was talking about that Tristan McKenzie shut him down. Clase came in and shut him down the ninth, and they asked him afterwards, they were like, well, what do you think about facing the Yankees? And Clase said, I don't care if it's the Yankees, I don't care if it's anybody else, I'm going to beat any team that's up against me. And I love that confidence that he has, and when you have an 101-mile-an-hour cutter that you can throw in no man's land and get guys to swing at it, you should have that kind of confidence.
Absolutely. And confidence has to be extremely high when you're a closing pitcher because all of the pressure is on you. So definitely Emmanuel has the confidence at that position, and he's done big things for Cleveland this season. I want to talk now about the manager, Terry Francona. Terry's been around for a long time. He's a veteran. He's had ups and downs. He's also had success being a World Series manager with the Boston Red Sox. So we know his pedigree is top-notch. Just give me your thoughts on Terry and what he's done with the club this year.
Yeah. So Francona is always good. He's always somebody that you want around. I remember read a book by Russell Carlton called The Shift, and he kind of said, you know, it's hard to really nail down what a manager provides for a team, but one thing we can do is see how their teams hold up over a whole season, because the big thing about being a manager is getting your team effectively through 162 games. And I know that in the rankings that he provided, Francona, I believe at the time, was the number one rated active manager as far as getting his team to maintain a level of play through 162 games. I think that kind of demonstrates his value. There are times where his in-game decisions are a little questionable. There are times that it seems like he maybe prefers a veteran that he's seen for a while over a younger player who might actually deserve the opportunity. There are times that happens, but this year his hand's really been forced, and he's definitely gone along with it to start all the best young players that he can. It's the youngest roster in the major leagues, younger than any roster in AAA as well. And he's fully embraced that, completely on board with that, and it's been great. And he continues to do what he does best, which is keep guys at a consistent level of play, keep them from getting two up or two down, and help manage them through the grind of an 162-game season. And, you know, whether you want to say it's luck or whether you want to say it's a particular management and plan skill, the Guardians tend to avoid, you know, just a rash of injuries. There might be some injuries here and there, but they tend to avoid that rash of injuries, and that's a good thing for Francona and for his staff. But knock on wood, because you can never expect when an injury will happen. But it's definitely an example of how he usually tries to manage guys pretty well.
Rightfully so. I want to talk now just about Cleveland being a Major League Baseball city. We know Cleveland, that franchise, has had a great history of being a part of Major League Baseball. But unfortunately, sometimes it gets overshadowed by the bigger markets like Chicago and New York and Atlanta and L.A. and San Francisco, just to name a few. In your opinion, Quincy, what makes Cleveland such a unique city, not just for sports, but most importantly for Major League Baseball?
Yeah, I think that Cleveland is an example of the importance of sports to a town, to an area. I don't want to sell it as the most important thing, but, you know, for a town and an area, sports can provide a sense of local pride. It can provide a chance for businesses to, you know, ride a rising tide of a team's success and a team that's doing well, an organization that's run well, to come alongside and also get their own success. And, you know, I think it's been a struggle for some Cleveland fans this year who had trouble letting go of the name Indians and going with Guardians. So that's been a little bit of a struggle, but the fact that the team has put such a great product on the field has been an immense encouragement to that. And the fact they were able to lock up Jose long-term was a big deal. So it's kind of let the people here know that, hey, this team is invested here. They're going to stay here, and they want to be part of what's going on in the city. The good and the bad, this team has been here with us, and they've been good and bad, but mostly really, really good over the past 30 years. So I think Cleveland fans appreciate that, and they look forward to the future since the team has one of the top three farm systems in baseball and a lot of great young players. So I think you'll see a lot more people that maybe are will have reservations about the name change start to really come on board as this season goes on and as future seasons come. And that'll be a big deal for the Cleveland area. You know, it's economically tough here in a lot of ways, but it's a beautiful city, a city that's trying to get better, and a city that is trying to say, hey, what can we provide for young business people to do? And part of the answer to that is to go see a great baseball team and have a great experience at their baseball park.
I want to stay just with Cleveland for a moment and the stadium that they play in, which is Progressive Field. We have Fenway Park, Yankee Stadium, Wrigley Field, Citi Field, of course, Dodger Stadium. Those are just some of the great stadiums in Major League Baseball. But in your opinion, Quincy, what makes Progressive Field so unique from the others?
Yeah, I think when I think of Progressive Field, I think a lot of times of Camden Yards. Both were put up around the same time, and Progressive and Camden Yards do a good job, I think, of saying, hey, how can we provide something that has a modern feel but also has that sense of like kind of a unique park that people can hang with them, and so they've got that little Monument Park with some trees out in center field, which is kind of a neat little batter's eye spot. And then they have the kind of the mini green monster over in left field. And then you have that little bit of a short right porch that expands out. And that kind of makes it a unique ballpark. It plays well for offensive teams, but it also isn't terrible for pitchers. There are days in the summer where the ball really flies. But there's not a bad seat in the ballpark. Everywhere you sit, you can get a pretty good view of the field. And, you know, it'd be nice if it was packed, and it can get packed at times when a team's super successful. But it's also kind of nice to know that you can have a little room when you go out. And, you know, I think it would be nice if the team would maybe make it a little cheaper for families to come, a little cheaper for families to eat at the ballpark, and maybe focus a little more attention on making things special for their season ticket holders. But overall, I don't think you can get a better value for the price as far as an entertainment event in Cleveland. Whether you're going to Playhouse Square or see the Browns or the Cavs, the Guardians certainly give you some pretty good value for the money as far as a successful team, a fun experience in the ballpark, and prices that aren't out of this world. So, and the ballpark is pretty to look at. And they're going to make improvements to it over the coming years. They kind of got that done as far as negotiating with the city and with new ownership to make sure that they can improve the ballpark, make it a little more kind of modern, accessible without changing the look of it. And then also maybe do some stuff surrounding the ballpark where there's, you know, maybe some more shops, maybe some apartments, make it a livable, walkable area with some fun stuff for people to do. I know that's the plan. So hopefully they can pull that off because I think it'd be pretty great. And the ballpark's kind of a jewel to put right in the middle of that.
Awesome. And you heard it from him. He's Quincy Wheeler, the host of the Guardian Fancast, which is dedicated to all things related to Major League Baseball's Cleveland Guardians. Quincy, thank you so much again for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on the program. Tell everybody what Guardian Fancast is all about and what type of information you guys provide on the podcast.
Oh, that's it. Thank you, Ed, for having me on. It's very kind of you to ask, and hope everyone that listens to you knows how much I appreciate that, and I'm glad to discover the content that you provide, and I'll keep checking in on it. If folks want to check out my podcast, it's definitely directed at the Guardians. As the offseason goes on and as the trade deadline, you'll hear me interview, cover other teams about potential trades between our teams. Sometimes I'll talk to rival teams, fans too, and kind of hear back and forth. But in general, we focus on the Cleveland Guardians and the beautiful game of baseball. So you can find me on Twitter at Guardian Fancast, or you can find me at Quincy, Q-U-I-N-C-Y, Wheeler1. And you can find me there, pretty active on Twitter. And then any podcast, any big podcast service, I don't do all the small ones, but Spotify and, you know, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all those different podcasts, you'll find what I do. And Monday through Friday, I put out a little 15 to 25 minute podcast, and we'll talk about what's happening. I interview other Guardians fans, interview sometimes people that cover the Guardians, and just talk about the team and have some fun times. So thanks again for having me on.
Well, you're welcome anytime, Quincy, and thanks again, Matt, for giving that vital information to the listeners out there. Before I let you go, I know baseball and food go hand in hand. In Boston, there's the Fenway Frank. In Los Angeles, the Dodgers have the Dodger Dog. When you go to Progressive Field, what are some of your favorite foods that you like to eat at Progressive Field for an Indians game?
Oh, good question, Ed. Yeah. Well, if you go to Progressive Field, one thing that you should make sure you do is kind of go on the outskirts of the park, and you'll see some of the local establishments have small stands. Melt has sandwiches that are all fried and grilled cheese, so, I mean, you can't go wrong with that. And Barrios does some good nachos, kind of fancy nachos for you. And there's a Rooster's Chicken, and that's really good chicken if you're into that. My favorite at Progressive Field is a place called Happy Dog, and it's down the third base line in that back concourse. And if you go to Happy Dog, you'll notice they have a lot of different hot dogs, which doesn't sound exciting, but they do a lot of different things with those hot dogs. And my favorite is a hot dog called the Killer Kilbane Dog, and it has some green relish and some peanut butter and some sriracha sauce. And I know that some people might be like, oh, man, that doesn't sound good, but it is a flavor combination that you won't forget. So I recommend the Killer Kilbane Dog for anybody stopping by Progressive Field. And if you do stop by Progressive Field, feel free to look me up on Twitter, send me a message, or send me an email, and I'll make sure, you know, I give you, if I'm at the ballpark that day, that I give you any advice I can about where to park for cheap and different tips that you might want to know.
That's an interesting combination, peanut butter and sriracha. Wow, I thought I heard it all, but I have not. And that's Happy Dog,
that's
ladies
good,
and gentlemen. And you heard it from him. That's, again, he's Quincy Wheeler. He is the host of the Guardian Fancast. One more time, Quincy, tell everybody where they can find you on social media as well as the Guardian Fancast.
All right, so just search for Cleveland Guardian Fancast on your primary podcast servers, and you'll be able to find me. And if you go on Twitter, Guardian Fancast, and then Quincy Wheeler 1, either one of those ads, you'll find me in the content that I'm able to put out. So thank you. Yeah.
You're welcome. And you heard it from him. He's Quincy Wheeler. Quincy, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on the program. If ever you want to come back on, feel free to let us know.
Oh, I hope to sometime, Ed.
Be back with more right after
0-2
this.
0-2 pitch. Oh, Jose, did you get it all, though? Back to the wall, Profar. He'll watch it sail out of here. And the Guardians will play from in front. Jose Ramirez, the little guy, striking big early. That's clubbed. Deep left center field. It's in the alley, and it is out of here. Jose Ramirez.
Did you see Snell looking at his catcher? He called for a slider down, and it was down. But he kept his hands back and just slugged it out of here.
When it comes to our children and families, we do everything we can to play it safe. Did you know? The single best way to help safeguard from flu and reduce the spread of the flu virus is through annual vaccination. Families Fighting Flu is devoted to protecting your family against this serious and potentially deadly disease. Our commitment comes from our organization's personal experiences. I lost my 5-year-old healthy son, Joseph, to the flu. The flu poses a serious risk to everyone, from the young to the elderly. But we know that flu vaccines can save lives. Increasing the number of flu vaccinations by just 5% could prevent nearly 800,000 illnesses and 10,000 hospitalizations. Help keep your family and your community safe. Together, we can fight the flu. Get yourself and your family vaccinated this year and every year. For facts and tools, visit familiesfightingflu.org.
Everybody, that's going to do it for this edition of Extra Base Hit. Thank you to Quincy Wheeler. Quincy is the host of the Cleveland Guardians Fancast. Check out the Cleveland Guardians Fancast on Twitter at twitter.com/Guardian Fancast, and also available on Apple Podcasts, giving us a great insight of what's currently going on with the Cleveland Guardians and what makes Cleveland so unique, not just in Major League Baseball, but just in sports in general. And thank you to the listeners out there for tuning in again to this edition of Extra Base Hit. Until next time, I'm Ed Robinson. Thanks so long, everyone.